Welcome, everyone. It's wonderful to be here together, and particularly if I can see your faces. So, in about 8 hours, we'll be chanting Kol Nidre. The words Kol Nidre may evoke first the haunting melody rather than the words that we associate with beginning our day of fasting. It's a melody that gives voice to a yearning of the soul for connection to something greater than the self. Kol Nidre means all vows. Written mostly in Aramaic, this legal declaration is like a big disclaimer that we make ahead of time. It's not a prayer. It doesn't have the form of Baruch Atah, in which we are praising God. It doesn't have the form of Yehi Ritzon, may it be your will, because we're not asking for anything. Rather, it's a legal formula used for the annulment of vows. It deals with what we call, in current legal terms, breach of contract. These vows, according to Torah, refer to solemn binding promises made before God. Torah is very clear about the significance of our sacred obligation to fulfill any vows we make. In Parsha Matot that we read not too long ago in the book of Bamidbar, we read, if a man makes a vow to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, if a person makes a vow to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, we'll get to the gender thing in a minute, or takes an oath imposing an obligation upon himself, he shall not break his pledge. He must carry out all that has crossed his lips. However, as soon as we're told this, we're given the exceptions, because even the ancients knew, of course, life happens. And the universe or the human psyche can make it impossible for us to fulfill all our pledges despite our best intentions. So, in this parsha, we are presented with situations in which women, wives, or daughters make a commitment, and then later the husband or father forbids them to fulfill it. In these cases, given the rules about men being in charge of what women can do, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh releases the woman from her obligation. It is as if she did not make the vow, and she is not guilty of breaking the vow. Thus, there is legal or Torah precedent for Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh forgiving people who make a vow and then become unable to fulfill it. In the Kol Nidre disclaimer, there is no need to prove that a husband or father or tyrant is forcing you to behave against your will, against your intention to keep the vow. That could be an outer tyrant or an inner tyrant, but there's no need to prove that. The disclaimer is made for any vow we make before Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, regardless of the cause for breach of contract, whether that be weakness of inner strength, life circumstances, historical or climate events. But why are these vows what we say we're going to do? Why is this so important? So, the importance of words is part of our creation story. God spoke and the world came into being. Baruch she'amar v'haya ha'olam. Referring to this awesome power of words, Rabbi Lu, in his book, This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared, points us toward what is actually an interesting controversy about the origins of the word abracadabra. While both Latin and Hebrew origins are considered by different linguists, those who favor the Hebrew etymology say that abracadabra comes from the Hebrew words ebra kedabri, meaning I will create, as I spoke. This resonates with the Kabbalistic notion that the words and letters of the Hebrew alphabet have the power to create. Words are powerful. What we say really matters. And, on the other hand, we know that we can't always fulfill our vows because things change. This is a Jewish teaching on impermanence. So we repeat the words of Kol Nidre on Erev Yom Kippur. The tradition for this declaration, when we look at the whole service, incorporates the legal structure of the Beit Din. The declaration is recited three times before three judges. So if you remember the choreography, we always have three leaders of the congregation reciting the declaration. And if we recall the way this service, the whole service begins, first we chant, Or Zaruach La Tzadik, light is sown for the righteous, joy for the upright. So it's striking that we begin the evening with the imagery of light and the promise of joy. It is perhaps a reminder that the purpose of our spiritual practice, including this day of fasting, of embodying the process of dying, is to open ourselves to light, to the possibility of joy and serving something greater than the self. It is a good intention to set, as so much of what follows in the service for the whole next 24 hours is about our shortcomings and imperfections as human beings. But then, even before we get to Kol Nidre, another declaration is made and repeated three times. And when I think of this part, I think of the sound of Reb Moshe's voice saying these words very authoritatively, immediately comes to mind. With the consent of the Almighty and consent of this congregation in a convocation of the heavenly court and a convocation of the lower court, we hereby grant permission to pray with Avaryonim, to pray with transgressors. The word Avar Yonim has many resonances. It's commonly translated as transgressor, those who have crossed over the line. For those people who had to take Latin in high school, transgress literally means to cross, to go across. Those who've broken a rule. While I have found no definitive source for this tradition, because again, there's controversy, it is believed by some that the Avar Yonim were the Jews of Spain who had to pretend to convert to Christianity to avoid death, but had secretly remained and practiced as Jews. The annulling of vows may have had this origin or derived momentum from the need for Jews to convert in order to live. And this declaration is proclaiming ahead of time that the conversion vows are null and void. So the Beit Din could be giving us permission to pray with these secret Jews. Or, as Rabbi Lu points out in his book, This Is Real, does Avar Yonim refer to all of us, as all of us have transgressed? This is a day of acknowledging our imperfections. The word Avar offers other layers of meaning as well. In the passages that we've just read in our weekly Torah readings from Dvarim, Moses has been begging God, Evra na, let me, I pray, cross over and see the good land, et ha'aretz hatov asher be'ever ha'yarden, the land on the other side, be'ever, the other side of the Jordan, that good hill country. Ya'avor also means pass, as in the well-known saying, Gam ze ya'avor, this too will pass. So could Avar Yonim refer to all of us mortals who inevitably pass from this life? Or to our capacity for transformation, all of us who are subject to change or capable of transformation, as Rabbi Lou suggests. Another recognition in Jewish practice of impermanence. As Rabbi Lou points out, in granting permission to pray with the Avar Yonim, we are not simply granting permission to pray with those who have transgressed, but with those who may change in the coming year, those who may experience transformation on any physical, emotional, or spiritual plane, those who may change because of illness or aging, or because of spiritual or psychological transformation, in other words, all of us. So this introduction, as well as the intent of the entire declaration of Kol Nidre, could be considered a meditation or a teaching on impermanence, or an embodiment of the reality of impermanence. A vow we make today we may not be able to fulfill tomorrow because things change. And of course, it makes sense to begin this 25-hour fast with this reflection on impermanence, because the whole day is an intense, embodied, and ritualized enactment of our own death. I've often reflected with this group on my reaction when I began to really appreciate the Buddhist teaching on the impermanence of all things that arise in this world. It is, as I often also say, when we talk about insight meditation, it's not an analytical insight. It's the deep knowing that one has when one sits in silence, that everything that arises passes. The breath arises and passes, each breath, each sensation, each thought that enters the mind. That's what we learn through the nonverbal experience of sitting, that you can't really be told about it or discover it through simply a rational process. It has to be a lived experience. And in addition, with the Four Noble Truths, the teachings explain how our wish for things to remain the same, or to be the way our clinging, to having things be the way we want them to be, that this leads inevitably to suffering and disappointment. We want things to remain the same, and inevitably they change. How peace and freedom, it explains that peace and freedom are to be found in accepting and embracing the impermanence of all things. And in the big picture, this precious gift of human life. So when I found these teachings so illuminating, I used to think, why in my Jewish experience has no one ever taught me these practices for accepting impermanence? And then as Yom Kippur approached, I saw what had been there all along. A whole day devoted to embracing impermanence. We wear a kittel, the shroud in which we will be buried. Or we wear something white to represent the burial clothes that we'll wear one day. We refrain from eating or drinking or engaging in any life-affirming activities. And there it is, an elaborate ritual enactment and embodiment of our own death, hidden in plain sight in the Jewish tradition, the Jewish teachings of impermanence.